the course is Becoming Your Best Self, and it's just a short course on balancing emotions based on Buddhist psychology, relevant whether you're Buddhist or not. And we've already covered quite a few things, so I can just kind of briefly go through what it is that we've already gone over. We looked at what happiness is and the three types of happiness. Was anyone here during that for that class? Yep, quite a few of you. And hopefully it was helpful to be able to identify, you know, just kind of the ordinary pleasures of the senses, good food and music, and then a deeper sense of happiness that comes to do with being creative, with contributing to the world, with helping others, with concentration, with really mastering whatever we're doing. And of course, the ultimate happiness being the happiness that comes entirely from within. And that cannot be lost. Then we looked at eight worldly concerns, all the things that distract us. Did anyone here have any distractions? And the eight worldly concerns, those things that corrupt all of our good intentions, we can see at play in the world, but also in our own life. That's how come we procrastinate, how come we get distracted. How come at the beginning of the year we've got all these projects and at the end of the year, how many are finished? Don't know if anybody else has that problem, but the three higher trainings, was anyone here for that class? Do you remember what they were? Three things, one, two, three, that to become a really successful human being, skills that we need to train in. Ethics, that's clear, isn't it? When we look at the news, that ethics doesn't come naturally, is it? We've got to actually train in it. Ethics, what else was it? Wisdom and concentration. That's right, remembering to put it all into practice. Then we looked at, hello, can we come in? How to listen to the wisdom that is within all of our experiences of unhappiness, including anxiety and depression. And that in particular, even if we just remember that things like anxiety and depression are symptoms, they're evidence that something's wrong, out of step, out of kilter in our life. And because something is out of step, we can actually change it. It shows us where to look. So listening to that hidden wisdom. And then last week we looked at how to stop feeding the monster, so the negative habit cycle, and how to replace it with a habit of natural flourishing. So that with some effort and using our three higher trainings, there comes a time where it is easier to respond to change, to difficulties, with a really positive frame of mind, rather than with fear, rather than with stress. So how did you go? Did anyone have a go at the reflection sheets or have any kind of feedback about how you went with looking at that that cycle of feeding the monster or replacing it? How did you go? How was the week, everybody? Oh, I see you've got a really full notebook. That makes me happy. So, did anyone remember to apply that positive flourishing cycle to identify where you're up to in it? Yeah, kind of. You try to, yeah. It's hard in the beginning, it is. But take heart, it's like the first initial effort. And then even that can become a habit to just check. So.
I noticed just how much I really, really don't like the discomfort.
Yeah, and that is natural.
I do everything I can to make. I've had a couple of stressful situations where I just was like, okay, cake, coffee, what can I do to make the pain
better?
And I just found myself just in that, you know, consumed by that. And none of this was there.
But at least if you recognize that was happening, That's already.
I was recognizing it, but I just wasn't like, I'm just too awful that things like the ground wanting to swallow you up and be like, anything I can do to make this go.
That's right. Yeah, because we have that. The things that we don't like, something's unpleasant, we just panic. Venerable Rabina was talking about this on Saturday as well. We just panic straight away, try and get rid of it, because the assumption is that it feels bad, therefore it's bad for us. It'll harm us. But yeah, it can come in waves, can't it? All of that dissatisfaction and unhappiness, and we just want to get rid of it. So, and it's the wanting to get rid of it that is actually the danger. And I think we underestimate our fortitude, how much we can bear. And again, even just bearing discomfort, we can do, if we know there is going to be a benefit in there, we can do it without freaking out. But it's if we can't see any benefit that we really, really is harmful. So what we're going to have a look at today, putting everything together that we've looked at in this course, Becoming Best Self, into a daily practice. So what it is that we actually practice during the day. And structured as some form of morning motivation, during the day what to do, and then ending the day, making sure you end the day on a high note, not just end the day exhausted and demoralized, folks, but ending the day on a high note. I've got a couple of meditations that I wanted to lead you through tonight as well, because we haven't really had a chance to have some guided meditations. So just so you get a feel for how they can be really nice. And some kind of, we can use prayers. If you don't like prayers, you can use poetry. There are some that are quite moving. So I've got a couple of little things. But let's start with a breathing meditation. So I've just put a picture up there as a prompt, because often it's not that we're trying to see light or smoke or anything like that, but often when you first start looking within, it's just all sorts of distractions or it's just all black. So just to be able to have it as a prompt if you need. So let's just get our posture comfortable. Try and have your spine straight and your posture relatively symmetrical. So feel that you're relaxed, that you're well grounded. Feel how the ground, the seat supports you. And to help keep your spine naturally straight, imagine a fine thread of light running through your body up through the crown of your head, and just as if it's being pulled upwards. You might notice that you'll sit back a little bit. Let the whole chest and heart area open up, pull the shoulders back a little bit. Have your head just slightly tilted forward, chin tucked in. And let your shoulders drop. Once the spine is straight, you can let go of any tension in the neck and the shoulders. So feeling, remaining relaxed, but well grounded. And then take a series of cleansing breaths. So that is breathe in slowly and deeply and comfortably through the nostrils, and then pause, just hold it for a moment, and then gently expel the out breath. As you're breathing in, feel that the air that you're breathing in is vibrant and it's permeated with white light energy and radiance. and feel that it's in the nature of clarity and loving compassion and all the other qualities of enlightenment. And as you breathe in, this energy enters deeply into you, permeating your whole being. And that the light begins to loosen or dissolve any blockages, any residue of disturbed emotions. Feel that any tightness or constriction, any sleepiness or confusion, any internal blockages or saboteurs like that are dissolved in this radiant white light energy. Every time you breathe in, feel that you breathe in the enlightened radiance of all those good qualities of good people and enlightened beings everywhere. You breathe that in the form of blissful light, and it flows through you, loosening up all the negativities, dissolving them. And then any interferences or anxiety or depression that still feels there within you, feel that it takes the form of fog or smoke, and that every time you exhale, you breathe it out slowly and thoroughly. And as you're breathing out, you let go of all those interferences. And they just drift away from you, like smoke does. Like toxins leaving a chimney. So just keeping the natural rhythm of your breathing, breathing in the cleansing white light and energy that flows through you, and then breathing out the dark fog-like energy, all the confusion, all the unhappiness, all the fear, and feel how good it is to release that toxicity, to breathe it out and be rid of it. And as you let your body breathe itself, feel yourself growing lighter, your body slowly transforming from a heavy physical object into a spacious body of light. All the veils of confusion breathed out in the form of that smoke, and your mind becoming progressively more clear, more aware, more energized. Just letting the breath come and go as it will. And focusing on whatever feeling of clarity and freedom and weightlessness of light and peace. And even if there's only been a very slight shift in your feelings of openness or well-being, focus on that. Let your awareness rest gently on that. And then from this feeling of ease and openness, then we can set our motivation for tonight's class. Recognizing our true nature is clean and clear, inherently joyful, blissful, calm and clear. And we can set our motivation putting forth our best self. A really altruistic reason for being here, to bring the utmost benefit to ourselves and all others in whatever way we can, day by day, starting right here with ourselves. And then you can gently bring your focus back to the room, open your eyes if they're closed. Keeping that sense of ease and clarity. So I hope you enjoyed the most simple breathing meditation, but it can be that simple. Really, it's just as much as what we focus our mind on, it's where everything else will follow. So let's have a look. I'll get rid of the. I've started with put the heading here as good from the beginning, in the middle, and at the end, because that's one of the highest forms of praise that anyone can give in the Buddhist world. Is, you know, whenever you have an event or a teaching or something, and someone says, "Oh, it was good in the beginning, the middle, and the end," that's like, woohoo, nailed it. So we can make our day like that good too. And we can think of it like that, in the beginning, during the day, and at the end. So it's like bookends. And I love this picture because it's bookends of our Buddha potential. What we can do each day, one thing is to personalize it. So whatever form of meditation practice that we have, we've got to make it relevant to our life. So we have the ingredients there, whether it's a Buddhist one, whether it's a Christian practice, whatever it is, we've got to actually apply it in our life. Just like a fitness program. And it's not just one size fits all. We kind of start with the things that worry us the most. You know, the things that are going to help us the most. We can concertina the time, because if we have this structure, beginning, middle, and end, if we've got very little time, we'll still have all the ingredients in there. But what I've found is if I have very little time, what happens? I just fall off the wagon. and then it's just like your focus is dissipated, you know, everything. But if you have the ingredients there, then if you've got time, you can spend more time. Or if you're a little bit panicked, you can spend more time focusing. So it's better to do something every day and make and have a little bit shorter than miss it out altogether. And I think we have these really big ideas and we can go for a while, especially for New Year's resolutions. And then because the idea was too big, oh, I'm going to sit down and meditate for an hour every single day. And then the day that we can't do an hour, then we don't do anything. So just think of it instead as a concertina. And with those bookends, have the courage to make the practice bigger, meaning an altruistic motivation. We might have to work up to the altruism. We might have to enthuse ourselves in some way or do some of the contemplations that we'll do in a moment. But if we don't, if we just meditate because we're stressed, what do you reckon is going to happen? We're just going to possibly relieve our stress, and then once the stress, the initial stressor is gone, we'll stop meditating. Or we'll just meditate when we're unhappy, and when life is going well, we'll fall off the wagon. And so then we don't get any practice. And so then when life crashes again, now suddenly we've got to start right back at the beginning, right when we've got hardly any resources to do it. So now, while we have this opportunity to make it an altruistic motivation, not just for us, but for everybody else as well, and not just for now, but for the long term. And from a Buddhist point of view, the purpose isn't just to make do in samsara, in cyclic existence. The purpose is to completely eradicate cyclic existence, that cycle of reactivity, and achieve a state of lasting peace. So that's the minimum we should be aiming at. Also then to help others. So how we can do it in the morning? Always set your motivation and have some way where you can pause and have some form of reflection, looking within. Because remember, even that's what a Buddhist is someone who looks within. So as you open your eyes, I think we talked about this last week as well, of making sure that as you wake up, you don't rush it. I mean, even if it's going to take just a few 20 seconds longer than normal to get out of bed, as you wake up, be very aware in that time as you're coming into consciousness. Because your mind is naturally clear then, and it's before all of the doubts, worries, and stresses have collapsed on you, and it's before all your conceptions about this and that and the world and like and dislike all come in. It's a much less complicated awareness. It's much more akin to that awareness of, say, doing that breathing meditation and becoming a bit more still and a bit more clear. So that's a natural occurrence. So to not rush through it and learn to pause, it's a very easy way to pause because you're already kind of there, just lying there, not rushing yet. And having that pause to recognize that clarity of your mind and just become aware of the experience of that clarity and recognize that as your nature. And then once everything starts crowding in, then you can get up really nicely and do maybe a formal sitting practice for, say, 10 minutes, 15, maybe 20 minutes maximum. Or if you've got no time to do a formal sitting practice, or you don't like doing a formal sitting practice like me, I'd go through stages. There were several years where I'd sit down in front of my altar and say my prayers and meditate and do the whole thing. And then I've gone through a whole cycle where I do this other thing, hitchhike on an activity. So I sit in the garden on a really comfy chair with my coffee and I do my meditation then. And because I know I'll never miss my coffee. So, I mean, that's a really bad Buddhist thing, you know, but you just use what you've got. So there's the habit there. I can make a coffee while still being asleep and I know I'm going to do it. So then I've just hitchhiked it on that when I sit down with my coffee, immediately I do my reflection, set my motivation for the day. So it's quite a powerful thing to do. We'll talk a little bit more about morning motivation in a sec. During the day, a couple of things. So watching, being aware of our body and our speech, how we are, what we're physically doing in the world, and how we're communicating. And mentally cultivating our positive habits. So it's no good just to try and be very good or to try and not be destructive. We've got to get proactive here and actually find some positive habits and cultivate them and focus on them so they become our whole world. And there is a time where with doing this, where everything becomes the practice then. There's no difference between sitting, meditating, and being out in the world. Everything is the practice. There's no arbitrary line, and really there shouldn't be. It's not like, oh, when I'm sitting meditating, I'm a good Buddhist, then I'm out in the world and I'm just running rampant. So if everything becomes a practice, what that means is pleasant things, unpleasant things, they're all grist for the mill. They're all part of it. And then that stops us reacting. Pleasant, unpleasant, all become useful and can support our development. Everything becomes the practice also means that we become so used to embracing whatever it is for our progress along the spiritual path that that becomes second nature. That becomes our driving factor, virtuous practice. And then at the end, evening dedication. So you can do some journaling. That's a nice way to reflect. Or have gratitude diary. A very simple thing, one thing that you could do better, instead of berating yourself, oh, you had a terrible day, nothing went right, just, okay, what's one thing I could do better? And then rejoice and appreciate the things that you did do. So that's the structure. Absolutely can't miss out on I would say to be able to really become your best self, you need that as a structure there. But you could see you can concertina it into a very short amount of time if you're time poor, or you could really stretch it out and enjoy it. So setting the direction in the morning. Okay, so the pause before you open the eyes. That has really profound implications for us because it means that we begin to be aware of that subtle clarity of our nature that is non-verbal, it's non-conceptual. And we start being able or creating the space at least to recognize our nature. It also means that at the end of our life, when we're going through the death process and all of our coarse conceptions and perceptions fall away, and what's left is that clear nature, we don't just miss it and drive straight through like a little tiny town, blink and you miss it, but we're used to pausing there. It's really crucial. So this is a very simple way of preparing, getting used to that. Short sitting meditation, hitchhike on an activity you already do. So some of the activities that you can hitchhike on, if you do regular swimming or regular cycling, walking, anyone walk the dog? Yeah. So you mightn't be able to do a very sophisticated meditation, but you can certainly use it to train habits. So as you walk out, you think about, may I always stay on the Dharma path? May I always live in the joy of ethics? May I rein in my negative minds and tame my negative minds? All of these things. So you can make the whole thing a very rich experience. When you're having a shower or doing your teeth, also it can be a purification practice. And I must say, I have my best contemplations on the bus. I love public transport. I never thought I'd say that. But, you know, there's just enough activity that my attention doesn't drift off. And I'm with people, so I remember who it's all for. And I don't have to talk to anybody, so I can have the whole conversation in my own mind. There's something about it where I don't know, maybe it's the momentum of the travel. You can really think about the things that you said in the morning and continue reflecting on them. Then you've got to remember who you're doing it for. Who are my people? Because, I mean, a lot of the Buddhist approach is to think that our purpose is to be able to help all sentient beings. But what does that mean? It's a very generic thing, isn't it? So you start off by who is your life for? Who are you living for? Sometimes it's family. If you have family responsibilities, you have people that you love in your family. But also there are many really strong groups like Alcoholics Anonymous or self-help groups like an Asperger's self-help group or a Survivors of Disasters self-help group or something where you recognize these are my people. And it's really profound to have your people. I mean, just recently we saw, you know, the march, was it yesterday? Such a long time ago already. You know, it's not really just a women's march, but, you know, the march. So recognizing that it's not just me, but there's others. So whatever group of people that we're in, you know, returned vets from various wars, it's so profound to just know it's not just you, but there are others. So that's at least from a secular point of view, that's where we start. Who are my people? And even if it's just the cynical, jaded, skeptical, that's also a form of suffering and they're my people. So for them, it gives you a lot of power. And that's also where you can bring in the news, what's happening topically. So the Women's March, you know, I have this huge feeling of just rage and desperation that just washes over me. And then under that, then I recognize, oh, there's suffering under that. So that's my purpose, you know, and it just diminishes my own little personal bit of suffering. It's nothing. So it's incredibly helpful. And just even last week, you know, the Mardi Gras, the LGBTQIA++, and I was thinking about that, you know, because people often kind of make fun of that as such a long acronym. But you know why it's important? Because you haven't missed out anybody. You've got to include everybody in there, not miss out anybody. And that's why they've got a plus at the end and then they've got another plus at the end to really say that the further in that you get, the more varied and wonderful human beings are, and we can't miss out anybody. It's important to name everybody. And then, so we've got the, you know, the me and my people, and our people becomes bigger. So we expand that out because it's not just the Women's March, but it's also the men that are suffering. So then you've got to expand it out to the men. And then you go, well, it's not just men and women and everybody on the spectrum that is suffering, but it's actually all living beings. It's animals too. It's everybody. We're all living on this planet together. So you expand it out till everybody becomes my people. But we don't leave it there. Then you've got to connect with your support, something bigger and better than you. So AA knows this by saying a higher power, that we have to somehow connect with a higher power because we've been alienated from our own. So this is the way to get back. So our support, our refuge, our mentors, what our lineage is, our spiritual tradition. From a Buddhist point of view, there are more Buddhas than sentient beings and their sole purpose is to help us all the time. But we're the ones who are disconnected. So we forget that. We forget about how our friends love us and want to help us. We forget about all the support that is around us because we're so kind of embarrassed about suffering, we try and hide it away. So in a way, we've got to let other people help us. And by remembering our refuge and our support, just doing a short meditation with just the light streaming into you from them, that you remember you're not alone. You don't have to do it by yourself. There's this unlimited kindness, compassion, and unlimited energy. And a way also to deepen our motivation is just by asking, why am I doing this? Why am I living? Why am I getting out of bed? Why am I going to work? Ask three times so that we get deeper, so that we don't get distracted, and so we don't end up spending days, years on things that don't really matter to us and then kind of really regretting. And the minimum setting our direction in the morning that we can have is from His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. Whenever possible, I'll show kindness. It's always possible. So in terms of a way to set your motivation in the morning, how does that seem? Useful? Can apply some of it? You know, if we don't, I think what happens is we really we shortchange ourselves. There's a wealth of kind of energy that we can tap into here. Yeah, Emma.
Would you be setting your motivation like while you're waking up, that, or at the start of your morning?
I think a bit of both. So while you're waking up, try and pause, and then once the clamour starts, then go straight into the motivation. At least the minimum, whatever happens today, I'm going to try and be kind whenever possible. It's always possible. So that you get off straight away on the right track. Don't let the worries be the first thing, and don't let social media be the first thing. Even if you kind of like reaching, and used to be reaching for the cigarettes, now it's reaching for social media. Even as you're reaching, you've got to go in your mind, oh, everybody that I see on social media, may they be safe, may they be happy, may they be kind, may they be free of suffering, may I be the one to help them. Okay, give me the Facebook. You got to get it in there beforehand, or it's just all over.
So by hitchhiking, you mean sort of tag on something
very, yeah, so like walking the dog or running. Every time you have a shower or clean your teeth. So I have a whole little thing. When I put my eyebrows on, I go like the two wings of the bird, wisdom and compassion. And then when I put my mascara on, it's my, I have like the Deva's eye and the eye of compassion. And then when I put my earrings on, may I have like Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, your ears are made to hear problems. So may my ears be beautified with patience. So it's this whole little thing, and it's much better doing that than going, oh, God, you know, poking myself in the eye with a mascara thing and feeling disconsolate about how I look or whatever. So whatever that you already have a habit, because it takes a lot of energy to start a new habit. So this is like a cheat sheet. You take a habit that you already have, something that you already do automatically. And so then it takes very little energy to put in a layer of meaning here to retrain ourselves. Another thing that I used to use was watering the garden, because I used to hate watering the garden, so boring and so tedious, until I figured out how to make it a really lovely Buddhist meditation of having the nectar of Chenrezig's compassion whooshing down into all the hell realms. And then it was great. So the main thing, because following on from last week, we were talking about habits, how habits have that momentum. They're self-propelling. So whatever it is that we normally do, usually a neutral thing, we can use it to really develop our good qualities. So here's a motivation from Lama Yeshe in terms of a more formal way of setting your motivation. So this might be once you've started all the internal chatter, or maybe you're sitting down for your formal meditation, then you can have something more like this. What's the purpose of being alive today? It must be something more important than drinking coffee. So I'm having my coffee. Today I will develop bodhicitta, the mind of enlightenment, leading to the peaceful path of liberation and full awakening for the benefit of all beings. Okay, so that's the ultimate kind of goal to have. From this moment on until I go to sleep, I shall stay aware of every action of my body, speech, and mind. Wherever possible, I shall try to help, and at the very least, I will not harm. So it's quite a nice one, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Quite comprehensive. Then a contemplation to do, the minimum contemplation that we need to do, whether you're religious or not, whether you're Buddhist or not, is developing what are called the four immeasurable attitudes. So if we can do this, the world will be a transformed place. Loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. So if we can develop these qualities in our heart, that's like our ultimate protection from corruption, from distraction, from being reactive, retaliating. It means all of our best intentions will turn out well. These attitudes are much deeper than an emotion or a feeling. They're actually an activity or an attitude. So it doesn't matter. Say with loving kindness, don't think that that means you're all lovey-dovey and want to give someone a hug. It's actually the wish that everyone had happiness. So you can actually generate loving kindness towards your enemies. You can sincerely wish that they had happiness. If they had happiness, if they had emotional freedom, you know, if they had the things that they needed, if they had the love that they craved, if they had meaning in their life, or if they felt worthwhile, they wouldn't be destructive. So you can genuinely have that feeling. Compassion. The wish that everyone be free from suffering and its causes. So this is what to do when you are overwhelmed with seeing suffering around you. Instead of just being overloaded and overwhelmed by that feeling, you turn it into a wish, which is an action, an activity. And the wish is, when you see it, may you be free of suffering. So that stops that kind of burnout that happens, emotional burnout. Because within that wish is kind of this determination, I'm going to try and help. If I can't help, I'm not going to harm. joyfulness, the wish for the happiness to continue, rejoicing in the goodness and the fortune of others. And it's kind of focusing on that internal sense of happiness that's not circumstantial. And the equanimity, wishing everyone was free of bias, free of favoritism, not holding some close and others distant. Well, wouldn't the world be a different place? And so equanimity for us means that, especially when we're faced with really bad behavior, with destructive behavior, with impossible situations, to hate the behavior but never the perpetrator. That's what equanimity means. So you can see how these protect us from all those disturbing emotions. And there is actually another layer of this. So they're not just, it's not just loving kindness for those I like, or it's not just equanimity for those I like and neutral people, but it's for everybody. It's not missing out anyone. So it's actually great loving kindness and great compassion, meaning that attitude encompasses everybody. The victims, the perpetrators, the good ones, the bad ones, the ones you cannot stand or that make you cry, and the ones you love. Can't miss out anybody. So this is something that we can train in, and what it does is it saves us from being partisan or biased, because if we're not careful, everybody has compassion for something or someone. But what normally happens, you see somebody suffering or downtrodden or abused, and you feel for them, and what else comes along with it? Anger, isn't it? Anger and hatred for the perpetrator. So that's the difference between ordinary compassion and great compassion, because great compassion encompasses the benefit of both. It sees there's the person being harmed and the perpetrator are both in trouble. They're both suffering. They both need help. So, you know, with the Women's March, so I just read this thing in Toowoomba. They were walking down the street. They only had, 300-400 people in Toowoomba, but they reckon that was a good turnout for Toowoomba. And they're walking down the street, and these tradies on a building site catcalled the women. Oh, anyway, there was a little bit of swearing to and fro, because the women weren't just going to like take it and run away and hope that they're not raped, because suddenly, you know, you've got strength in numbers. Anyway, so the company actually stood down that worker. It went and investigated immediately who it was and took them off the building site and stood them down. So that was pretty impressive. But not only that, they put them in for training. So that's the thing, isn't it? Because you can't just like go and kill one section of society. It's training, it's education. How come we can't do this? How come this is not acceptable? Everybody can be educated, mind education. That's the whole thing about His Holiness the Dalai Lama. We've got to educate our heart, educate our emotions. So that was the thing that I found really amazing. There's hope then. What was that other show too? I was just reading about American History X, you know, Edward Norton playing the right-wing Nazi kind of neo-Nazi guy, and he turned around and was also he re-educated himself. So that's the only way we're going to get peace on earth, peace in our own heart. So all of these attitudes, they have to encompass everybody, because we don't want our compassion to end up in hatred or violence, and that's the common trajectory. So this meditation that we're going to do now is a way of actually how to get below those kind of common emotional responses that we have to how to practice this. So it's actually a meditation of how to generate kind of great loving kindness. So it's called the World of Support. Before we do it, any kind of questions or comments about this the four immeasurable attitudes? I mean, in terms of if you're going to do any kind of spiritual practice, regardless of whatever religion, this is it. This is like the one. And we never stop doing it. Okay, so let's do a little contemplation then. How can we incorporate everybody genuinely? Okay, so just take a couple of deep breaths and straighten your spine again. So your posture is alert but comfortable. And imagine it's a beautiful day and you're sitting on a sloping hillside and the sun is shining and the ground is soft, the birds are tweeting, the air is clear, the sky goes on forever. And first off, imagine that on either side of you are all the people that have supported you and looked after you the very most in this life. So usually you'd say be your mother on the left and your father on the right. So the people that without them you wouldn't have survived. You wouldn't have got through childhood. So these the most closest supports. And imagine they're sitting there with you on the hillside, comfortable, also enjoying the wonderful day and the spacious sky, and feel how good it is to be with them. And feel how you wish the best for them. That's just a natural feeling, like warmth in your heart. And when good things happen to them, you're so happy. And feel this love that you have for them flow through your body like warmth and light and flow out towards them. And then in your mind's eye, see that seated behind you on this gently sloping hill are all the people that have supported you during your life, your best friends, maybe brothers and sisters, the kind teacher at school, the one that helped you or that saw some potential in you, possibly all the authors that wrote a book that changed your life, someone who lent you money to get you out of a fix or showed you kindness when you were in a strange land. So all of these people arrange behind you and feel how literally they have your back. And feel the warmth of your heart growing stronger, radiating out to each of them. And as the rays of kindness reach each of them, they too become happy and free of problems. And then arranged in front of you, imagine all the people who've challenged you to grow. The rude boss who you had to practice patience with. The social injustice that you stood up for, even if you were scared. The person who hurt you that you first got to practice forgiveness. The ones that clearly demonstrate how not to act. So feel how you have become a better person because of that. And feel the warmth flowing from your heart towards them, and as it does, it frees them from negativity. And they transform before your eyes, and their negativities fall from them like a crusty shell. And then surrounding all of these people are all the people throughout history who have indirectly contributed to your well-being. So if you've got a phone or a television or a computer, all those people that worked on the code, that developed the hardware. If you wear glasses, the people who developed optical lenses at the cost of their life. If you take medicine, all the researchers. Everyone who contributed to the development of agriculture throughout the ages, so we can have an effortless loaf of bread. All this benefit continuously that we receive from complete strangers. And feel how the warmth of your kindness and love flows from your heart towards them effortlessly, like breathing. So we have these three groups of people, the friends, the enemies, and the complete strangers. And we've benefited from all of them. Feel them all as a world of support. And as the warmth of love flows from your heart, wish them all to live harmoniously, to be happy, to be free of suffering. And then the light and warmth of kindness flows back to you in great waves of light, washing over you, absorbing into your heart. So breathe in this warmth and strength, and breathe out warmth and kindness. And then dedicate all the efforts of this meditation and the good heartedness of this meditation to be able to make this a living practice for us, to be able to bring it about the happiness and well-being of everybody. And take a deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth. Open your eyes if they're closed. So we are able to get a feel for that, a feel for the different types of people. And hopefully if you become familiar with that, then how you genuinely care for others and have genuine warmth towards others is deeper than whether you get on with them or not, deeper than how they're acting or not. Comments? Do you think you'd do the meditation again? Yeah? So all of those is a way of setting our motivation, and then once we're out in the world, how to act. And this will come naturally if we've set that motivation really strong. So we've got our 10-point checklist. And remember last week we looked at the 10 things to avoid, the habits for unhappiness. So this is the opposite, how to act. what to do instead. So the 10 virtuous activities. So before I go into those, part of why we need a list. I love the Buddhist list because there's always something I forget. I really need to have this list. Part of it, having this checklist of how to act, how to communicate, how to think and feel, is that we all want to feel worthwhile, don't we? I mean, there's even an ad on TV, you know, because you're worth it. So how do we get to feel worthwhile? It's not by telling ourselves so, and it's not by buying makeup either, but clearly there's a big need to feel worthwhile. So how do we feel worthwhile is by doing something worthwhile, and then naturally we'll feel worthwhile. But we forget, we think, oh, if we can't cure malaria or bring world peace, we can't do anything worthwhile. But it's much simpler than that. It's really simple day-to-day actions that we can do. Then we'll naturally have confidence, courage, self-esteem. The other thing, remember, is who we are isn't what we believe. Who we are is our behaviour. So we can practice, and as we practice, then it becomes a habit. And these positive ways of acting have really long-term benefits, but they also put fuel in the tank now. So if we're tired or demoralised, this is how to actually get more energy. Most of the time, we're focusing on our negativity. So what happens? They just get bigger and bigger, don't they? But if I said to you, so what were some naturally good things you did this week? What's some naturally virtuous things that you did this week? Name me some. You
gave a kid lunch today.
Excellent.
A kid.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
And I went to eat my lunch, and she's like, I'm starving, and I'm like,
oh, why?
So I gave them my lunch.
That's the right thing to do. Actually, I remember when I was travelling interstate as a teenager on an interstate bus, and I had no money, and they stop at the service station. Everyone goes out to have, and I just hung around outside because I didn't have any money. And this lady on the bus came and gave me an apple. Oh, I remember her to this day. I mean, that was the only thing I had for 24 hours, and she gave it to me. So, yeah, that's great. What else? What other naturally virtuous thing have we done this week? Now, if you draw a blank, it's not because you haven't done one. It's because you haven't been focusing on them.
Looked after an elderly gentleman at my work.
That's a big one, looked after, yeah. Yep, looking after the elderly, the vulnerable, helping them carry stuff, that's a big deal. So much of an elderly person's existence is just trying to, you know, battle through a day of life maintenance, let alone the inspiration of life. What else? What other things? Come on. Yes, Gerald.
Took the dog for a walk, even though it was cold,
wet, and miserable. I bet that dog was super happy.
So was the wife.
And did some of it rub off on you, Gerald? What about you, Catherine? Did you have, yeah?
Yeah, I rescued moths and cockroaches and agonical
moths. Rescued moths and cockroaches, yes. Yeah. That's right. So you've got a literal safety house zone. Excellent. Mia.
There was a little tiny, like extremely tiny moth in the middle of the building. And it was like the size of my hand. And it was and then I put it on my finger and then like, be free.
Excellent. So that's a lot more than just freeing a moth, isn't it? Because that's a whole heartfelt thing. Excellent. So, for the physical thing, so you remember the non-virtues, the ones to avoid. So, of course, we try and avoid harming, but then that's not enough. Then what to do instead? Protect life. That's a really big one. So even if, you know, the moth is going to probably die very quickly anyway. They have a short life. But by us protecting life, what's happening to our mind? We're gentling our mind. Protecting life, protecting the vulnerable. Sharing things. There. See, it's like number two in the top 10 list right there. So helping the elderly, sharing your lunch. And then the one, instead of, you know, not engaging in sexual misconduct, to stay faithful, you know, instead of don't rape or don't sexually abuse people at work, the other one, to stay faithful, to create harmony in a relationship. So those three things, the way that we physically are in the world, are virtues. So they're naturally positive actions. It's not to do with a list of this is what someone's decided is right or wrong. These are like universally recognized. Then speech and communication. So whatever we say, try and make sure it's true. We're not just telling porkies. Truth alone is not enough. Truth can be quite hurtful. So how the truth is delivered makes all the difference. So try and have harmonious speech that creates harmony, that you know, finds commonality, that enhances, you know, good relationships. Try and have gentle speech rather than harsh speech. Oh, fail on number six. I'm just one of those people that what comes out of my mouth isn't naturally gentle. Just, and it's not naturally quiet. I do have an excuse because my mother was three quarters deaf, so I learned to be basically a ventriloquist as a child. But, you know, the gentle does make all the difference, because I can say something, you know, quite nice, like my German friend of, do you want a cup of tea? And it's like, whoa, I don't know. Okay, and useful is what we're saying, useful. So that brings some awareness to it. It doesn't have to be deep and meaningful all the time, but it brings some purpose. Why am I saying this? Is it going to contribute and be useful? So that should help direct how we communicate with others. And we can do that whether we're feeling okay or not. And, you know, as a teacher, being professional as a teacher, you'd probably have it down of how to actually communicate like this, regardless of how you feel about everybody out there. Yeah. And I mean, that is a fantastic skill, really, really. And that's developing your natural virtues, virtuous speech. So if we live like that, already our world is transformed. There was some study that I read about that they did in England at work before COVID, when everyone went to work. And in this company, they all sat there and for just 5 minutes, from 9 o'clock to 9:05, everybody sat there and wrote down good qualities of all of their workmates. You can imagine what a difference that would make, right? Incredible. Just focus on their good qualities. But normally what happens, we focus on the negativities and then that's all we can see. Whereas those good qualities are also there, but we hardly ever see them. And sometimes you're like that with yourself too. But just 5 minutes, so just 5 minutes contemplating on the natural virtues of others, their strengths, the things they're good at, what makes them a good person. So these are a real protection too, because then when things change in life, so we might be in a workplace where it's easy to be true, harmonious, gentle, and useful with our speech, But things might change. We might, the boss might change. They might be really awful, but we've already got this really good habit. So we won't get caught up in the momentum of negativity that happens, in all the backbiting and stuff that just gets tighter and tighter. We'll actually be just protected from it. So these body and speech, when in company, this is what we watch. It should be fairly easy to do. Often when I lead a class on this, hardly anyone comes back the next week because everyone's really embarrassed, because even though it's really easy to do, hardly any of us do, especially in a rampant materialistic culture. But at least focusing on these virtuous ones, it'll make us just feel better. So it's becomes a self-perpetuating cycle in a positive way. And then when we're alone, what we watch our mind. So the attitudes to cultivate. A sense of contentment. What I have is enough. Instead of, you know, oh, I'm getting a bit bored, I have to go shopping, or all the things I don't have. Actually, what I have is enough. So contentment isn't something that happens to us. Contentment is something we have to cultivate. We have to grow a feeling of contentment. It doesn't come naturally. Kindness instead of malice, or instead of hatred. And kindness, developing a sense of kindness, like that meditation of genuine love for others, regardless of how they are in the world. And like the sun, non-biased, the sun shines on everybody, doesn't decide, you're no good, I'm not shining on you. So contentment works against covetousness and that kind of craving that eats away at us. Kindness works against hatred and malice. And curiosity works against distorted views. So distorted views is a big one. All of those prejudice and bigotry and everything. But the way out of it isn't to fight. It's not to get all shouty on social media. The way out of it is curiosity, and to allow yourself to be curious, to question. So my favorite show at the moment is You Can't Ask That. Has anyone seen that one on ABC? Oh, it's mind-blowing. There's 5 series and they're extraordinary. And they're brilliant because they are all of those taboo questions that you can't ask people. People who've survived disasters, transgender people, fireys, alcoholics, people who've killed somebody, I don't know, all sorts of just an array of human beings, and then all the taboo questions that you can't ask. So that'll pique your curiosity, but it's also fantastic because by the end of the show, you feel really close to every single one of those people. So it gets rid of fear, the fear of difference. So that's how to act, what to focus on, and then when we get to the end of our day, we do some divine accounting. So instead of worrying, or instead of rushing over the good things and worrying about the bad things, first off, congratulate yourself on the positive things. Really appreciate the naturally virtuous things that you did. And, you know, giving your food away is a big deal.
I'm starving.
Yeah, and especially when you're starving. And wars have been fought for less. You know, it's just throughout human history, and there's hundreds of SBS movies about this very thing. So it's a really big deal. So don't just go, oh, it was nothing, it was only lunch. Actually, look at it for what it is. It's the last thing that people look forward to in life is food. And there was that movie Armistead, you know, the slaves that being transported from America and then to from Africa to America, and they were there starving, and so everyone's just fighting, and there was one person who shared their tiny morsel of food. It was just, that was a radical action. So you appreciate that you've done it. Congratulate yourself and actually put some awareness onto it, because most of the time, anything good that you do, you just run straight past. And how's that going to make it strong? And on the negative things, the things that went wrong, the things that you feel ashamed about, the things where you know your motivation just went out the window or whatever, or you retaliated, then instead of berating yourself, so instead of going, oh, I am bad, which is wrong, that's a distorted view, think, okay, what's one thing I could do different? So it's not this wrenching, oh, I just want to become a whole different person, but it's actually this very pragmatic approach that just try and change 1%. 1% you can change, just a little bit different. That's how all the really good sports coaches get losing teams to start winning, isn't by going, you're winners, but by just changing everything, just be 1% better at everything. So I think it might have been Shane Tadeva, I can't remember, who at the end of each day had a pile of pebbles. And so he put out how many good things, there was the pile, how many things went wrong, there was the pile. And then you go, okie dokie, there it is in black and white. Some days the pile's going to be this way and other days it's going to be that way. So that also takes us to how would we rate our day, because often when people go, how was your day, you go, oh, you know, well, you know, how was your day? Tell me. What would you normally say? Okay.
Thank God it's over.
Thank God it's over, that's right. Or what would make it a good day?
Coming to this class,
music to my ears, Gerald. So, I mean, often I think a good day is just a day in pyjamas. I gotta admit it. But, so normally we relate how our day was by if it was pleasant or unpleasant, if good things happened or bad things happened. So it's quite a passive way of rating it, or it's quite a consumerist way of rating it. But actually, what about if we had a terrible day, everything went wrong and all the interwebs broke and none of the cords worked, but how did you rate your kindness to others? So you might have had a shit of a day, but your kindness to others, you didn't bust out. You didn't say the retaliatory thing. Or perhaps you were even kind instead of aggravated. So you might end up at the end of the day where you're exhausted, but it was an excellent day. So how would you rate your kindness? How successful were you in non-retaliation? They're the things to rate, actually. And so I think how you feel about the day, it gets to that deeper level of happiness. So instead of just, you know, what's coming in by the senses, a much deeper sense of satisfaction. So, you know, a lot of the work that people do it's not inherently fun or challenging or exciting, but there's a reason we do it, and that's what we come back to. That's what keeps us going. So then, at the end of the day, so you do your rating, you do your divine accounting, you adjust it so that it's actually about how much effort and developing your positive qualities, and then you have a dedication. So I love this dedication. Due to all the merits of the three times accumulated by me and by others, merely by seeing, hearing, remembering, touching, or talking to me, may any being be freed in that very second from all their sufferings, diseases, spirit harms, negative karmas, and obscurations, and abide in the peerless happiness of full enlightenment forever. Wow. Wow, I know, that's right. Isn't it awesome? I mean, it covers just about everything. So this means whoever you speak to on the phone, whoever you just write something on social media, whatever you put on Twitter or Instagram, anyone that makes any connection with you at all, may that be this bridge between them being completely freed of every single negativity, unhappiness, disease, COVID, neuroses, negative karma, obscuration, all of those things. And not only that, by that, by just seeing that photo of you on Facebook that you wish had have been deleted, may they abide in the peerless happiness of full enlightenment forever. So when I was making costumes, I was making costumes for circuses and street performers, so I'd dedicate every single costume like this. So it was like stealth Dharma. And some of them I actually, when I had the time, made some Mozart coats and things. So in between the lining and the coat, I'd actually sew in these dedications so that's there physically in the fabric. And so then, you know, the performers, their show is a success and people really connect with it. And, you know, it's just a frivolous show, but it has this effect of, you know, people have a moment of happiness, of relaxation, you know, respite from life. So this is kind of how I squared it out between, you know, in the scale of how to help the world, making a Mozart coat isn't really going to save anybody, is it? So how do you make it meaningful? How do you make it worth something? With the dedication. So you can do this, anything that you do in your life, you can dedicate like this. If you cook, if you make a sandwich, anyone who thinks of the sandwich, lusts after the sandwich, throws the sandwich, eats the sandwich, may they be free of all their sufferings and achieve the peerless happiness of enlightenment. So if you dedicate at the end of the day, and you can make your own dedication, but what it does is it gathers all of the energy of the day and it puts it back in that direction from the morning. It's really important at the end of the day that you regroup like that and you remember. Otherwise, all of your projects and everything, you're just going to run out of energy. They'll just fall away and nothing will get completed, or you'll get burnout. So at the end of the day, this is what stops you burning out. And it stops the energy being kind of destroyed by, if you have an argument with someone the next day, at least you've dedicated that day. So part of it is that you're looking forward to what all your efforts can accomplish. And it's like if you've ever learnt a musical instrument, at the beginning it could sound pretty awful. And if all you focus on is how awful it sounds at the beginning, you're not going to keep going, are you? So what makes you keep going? Carol, you know what makes you keep going. What makes you keep going with music?
I had a fantastic teacher. He was fantastic when I was studying classical guitar. And I loved it. And very quickly, he had me performing things that I really, really enjoyed. But later in life, teaching adults how to play the ukulele
Oh yeah, so you want something that's easy that you can accomplish, but that's the thing, isn't it? That you get a taste of the joy of it.
Yeah.
So if you're focusing on, oh my God, this is way too hard, you just give it up. But if you So, you know, you think about what you're aspiring to, how it's going to sound, how it's going to be wonderful, how you're going to play in a, you know, 100 ukulele concert group. It's going to be awesome. And so there's some joy that comes from it rather than focusing on, oh, my God, I can't get that right. So we absolutely must do this at the end of each day. All right, so then there's one final little meditation that we can do. We've got a few minutes left. Unless now, questions before we have our final contemplation. We've kind of got the bookends of our day now, don't we? We've got the beginning, we've got how to rate it at the end, we've got all the stuff to do in between.
Booking.
Oh, so excellent!
I because I've always stacked them, and she thinks it's full of sync. It's 2 hours. Man, it would like a week ago.
There you go. And synchronicity is powerful. Is spot on, Mum. It is. It's deep. Yes. So then there's a way you can hitchhike on it every time that you have those bookends, and you can think that.
The most important books to me. There's only about 10.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
That's it. Fantastic.
All my book covers, everything on my desk, my bag, is a Wonder Woman.
That's right. So Wonder Woman, an awesome superhero. So let's do a how to transform, how to step into our best self. I'm so happy to hear about both the bookends and the Wonder Woman. I think Wonder Woman's like a modern day manifestation of Tara, personally. She's one of the Taras. So our final meditation then. So you should be able to just easily settle back into meditation posture. Straight spine, upright kind of posture, but also relaxed. Feel that silver thread running through your body again, coming out the crown of your head, your posture naturally adjusting. And feel how the nice distinction between being relaxed but still being alert. Have your head just slightly tilted forward, chin tucked in, eyes just slightly open so some light comes in, jaw relaxed, tongue on the upper palate behind the top teeth. And we've been talking about our best self, becoming our best self. So let your imagination explore how you would be if you were fulfilling your highest potential. Imagine in front of you a screen like a big movie screen, and on it a super realistic movie of yourself in the best possible state going about your life. So watch yourself being kind and capable, being effortlessly generous, open-hearted, assured, in control and balanced. Even with qualities of your heroes, see on that movie screen what the body language is like of you being your best self, fulfilling your highest potential? What does that look like? What are your movements like, your posture? What's your smile like, your facial expressions? How much joy and energy would you feel in your body? And how would you speak with people? What tone of voice would you have? What manner of communication? What if you were one of your heroes? What would your mentor do? What would they do? What would the Dalai Lama do? What kinds of positive thoughts would fill your head? And now, with that movie still going, gently float over to yourself in that movie. And see and hear and feel everything from within your higher self with this wonderful feeling. Notice how good you can feel at your most loving and most confident. Just being relaxed and comfortable in your best self. How does it feel to know you're loved unconditionally, that you're full of energy, overcome obstacles, really enjoy exploring how good this feels. And feel it like warmth and light spreading throughout your whole body, through your heart, through your mind. And notice the balance of peacefulness and energy that you now have. And from this new perspective, look ahead for the coming weeks and imagine how things will be, keeping this feeling within you. What's your home life like with this new generosity and wisdom and potential? How will your work be different when you feel balanced and capable? How will you feel when you wake up in the morning? And then dedicate all of the merits and the effort that just as we have imagined becoming our best self, by acting this out, we can bring it into reality. We can become transformed. Remember this feeling. Keep it throughout the day to call on whenever you need. We have a dedication prayer that I'll read. That we could dedicate all of the efforts of this course, or your good intentions for coming along, for being here online. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of our merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments, and whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. And may the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. And for as long as space remains, and as long as sentient beings remain, until then may we too remain to dispel all the miseries of the world. So gather up all of the good energy from this whole course and set it off in this direction. You're really happy about having spent your time in this way. And I forgot to look at the calendar. So thank you for coming along and making it such a, this is my first kind of in-person class since kind of March last year. So it's been a big deal for me. Thank you so much for coming along. What we've got for the next couple of Tuesdays is some pujas. So they're ritual ceremonies. Lots of chanting, visualization, offerings, sometimes in English, sometimes in Tibetan, sometimes a mix of it. So if you want to come along to those, then please do, please feel free. And then I think so there's 2 weeks of pujas, and then after that there is a short 3-week course coming up with me again called How Buddhism Helps. So it's like an overview of really simple Buddhist practice. Otherwise, have a look at the calendar. There's heaps on. And I might get it together to send out a little survey of how you found the course and any feedback and things, which would be great if you could take the time to answer. I always find it really helpful. So,
no, it's actually the very first time. Today was actually, I grew up in a countryside, Mongolia.
Okay.
In Central Asia, you might know Mongolia quite well.
We had a couple of Mongolian people come here every now and again.
Ah, nice.
From Ulaanbaatar.
Ulaanbaatar, yes, that's the capital. So I was searching today. I really needed some temple or somewhere to visit because I got some of influence from my grandma. She was for sure a bit of Buddhist. So I literally spent my whole under 7-year-ish with her. So she got a lot of influence. I was sort of missing her, and I wanted to have a Buddhist temple, and then notice this one isn't actually Tibetan one. I really like a Tibetan one, and I ended up having a lot of online sessions I booked myself. This is the first one, and tomorrow, and I also this booked for this
for Tara
retreat. Tara retreat,
yeah white Tara retreat over Easter. Yep.
And then another one with Miss Robin?
Yeah, Robina on Saturday. Yes.
So on Saturday? Yeah. So a lot of sessions booked. All of this, and I was so excited that this one is very first.
Welcome. You'll probably see a lot of me because I lead the poojas when they're online. And and Venerable Rabina, who I quote from many times as well in the classes. So really lovely that you've finally come along. I'm just kind of moving so you can see the Buddha statue.
Yes, I can see it. I got just missing that spirituality. Like, you know, you have these callings like, I wish I can go. I used to have all this, you know, this 100 days thing you say, mantras and like this necklace, long necklace.
Yeah, mala. Yes.
108 pieces. Yep. Mala? How you call mala?
Yeah.
I do have that one from my grandma who has passed away a long time ago, but recently I lost it. So I was a bit like, I was a bit like I'm losing a big thing for me. And then I was searching and my boy is 6 years old and he was saying, Mommy, are you really missing your God bless you necklace? Yes, yeah. I miss my God bless you necklace.
Yeah. So you'll have to make your own now. By practices and saying all the mantras and the prayers on it, then you make your own to pass on.
Looks like that's the one, though, so that I won't miss too bad.
I think if you lose something like that, the inner teaching is that that loss then connects you back with a Buddhist center.
Nice.
Yeah.
I missed your name.
Taken it away from you so that you would find a Buddhist center.
Yes, that must be her. I missed the first 30 minutes. I didn't hear your name.
Oh, so my name is Miffy. I'll write it down.
Miffy.
Nice.
Lovely to meet you, Miffy.
Yeah, so I've been here a long time. I was actually brought up a Buddhist, even though, you know, brought up in Australia, but it was my mother who started this center. So I've kind of had a Buddhist background from a small child, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years old onwards.
Nice.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm really glad that you could join us, and I hope you got something just from today's class. I mean, putting it all together, a lot of it would have been familiar to you, I'm sure.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the meditations, although I had a little bit of pauses and I had needed to read all the bedtime stories and stuff like that.
Parallel stories going on.
Parallel stories going behind and then fall into a little bit of nap in between and, you know, all this having a little child stuff, but managed to get the gist of it.
That's good. And Anne, tell me, how did you go tonight? How are you?
I'm good, Miffy. It was I've stopped going down rabbit holes looking for research articles and things. but yeah, it was good. I did write a couple of things at the beginning, and I had just a question at the end on closing the day. So as we started, and we were talking about applying the practice. It's, I guess, more of a personal observation, but I'm always happy for things that you suggest there, because I found applying the practice, I really have it intellectually, but doing it in the moment is so hard and catching my mind. But having said that, attending Venerable Rabina on Saturday morning, a few things really came together for me. I took some notes. I mean, she speaks so fast and everything. So sometimes it's good, a bit like His Holiness, you just sit there and take it in. But I took down a few things and I've made some notes around the virtues and things like that to look those up. But just a few little diamonds that she dropped here and there really helped me get a handle on it, on thinking, I suppose it's about reinforcing what we're already learning here.
Yeah.
To just like more things you can do really in that moment when your emotion goes from zero to way up, whether it's a an angry emotion or a sad emotion or just frustration, whatever, being able to just be aware that that's happening and going, okay, let's look at that, you know, that's the hard stuff. Yeah.
So hers was like she was talking about, you know, the wheels falling off the car and how normally we just notice something's wrong when the wheels actually fall off. So we've got to become aware of the wobble, you know, way beforehand. And then actually she said, we've got to do the maintenance every day. Like we have to check the car every day. And if you don't, then you regret it later on. So checking our mind. So that's like even just to just have a normal, happy life, we have to do that.
That's right, because when it's going smoothly, you don't do the I don't do that. And it's not that I'm greedy or taking things for granted. I'm just very forgetful about it.
Yeah.
I'm very caught up in that everyday thing. And, I mean, I don't have a lot of people around me. I live alone, but I still get caught up in all the outer world distractions.
It is, and often our incentive is it's a worldly one, that when things go wrong, we don't want them to. So that's our incentive to practice. Yeah. So it's a very much that we just don't want to suffer. It's a very immediate, it's very short term. But it's a good enough place to start, because like I remember my whole thing when I moved from Melbourne to up here to Lungri Tampa Centre, and I got some advice from Geshe Tashi Sering, and I had to say 21 Tara praises every day. 21 Taras, 21 times. It took a long time. I mean, things were that bad that I had to say it that often. But it was brilliant. When else in my life have I said the praises that much? So in a way, it's thanks for all of those difficulties that I really blitzed it with those practices.
Yeah.
It's sad that we've got this worldly motivation to do it. So often it's the worldly motivation why people come to the center, why people come to class. That'll get you there, but you can't leave it at that.
That's right. And I mean, here I am. I've done this huge spectrum. Like, I first thought about the Dalai Lama back in 19. I'd come to Brisbane after living in Toowoomba for a really long time, raising my family. I thought about him. I think he was down in Melbourne at the end of, it was 98, 99, and I couldn't go. I didn't even have a job or anything. I was nearly 50, so, you know, it was kind of a crisis moment. But I thought about that and I suddenly took on board that I have got to go and see him if he comes again. And so I did. And then it was just this journey. It's been really interesting. And then I've even thought back, I lived at the Sunshine Coast, and I've said that before, when Lama Yeshe was there, what was I doing? I certainly wasn't at Chen Rezing, but it was like a parallel thing. So I've had that going on. But the reason I mentioned going to see His Holiness at various initiations and things, I've taken the commitments at each one, 108 Chen Rezig mantras. I've done it every day since. 28 Manjushris. I've done it ever since. And Singanada. I'm not doing 600 a day now, Miffy, but I'm doing 108 a day. So that's just part of my morning routine,
right,
along with starting the day in dedication. But what I realized, and I really appreciate what we did tonight, because what I realized is that I'm not closing off my day. I don't do a dedication. I do sometimes journal. And I thought, listening to what you were saying, how you can hitchhike or piggyback on something, I thought, well, I can do the journaling. I've now got your notes. I can bring some of that spiritual journaling, and then I can do my dedication. Mm. And while I mightn't be doing a Vajrasat for purification, which is quite long with all the Buddhas, I can start by doing that. And my question was, is that okay?
Yeah. Actually, I think journaling at the end of the day is excellent, because that's like the pile of the white stones and the black stones, but it's more reflective, and it, by bringing awareness to the end of the day like that, you have a better chance of really appreciating your efforts.
Yep.
And and you get a sense of the progression and the ebb and flow of your energy and things like that. So that's a very effective way that you do the journaling and then dedicating that. So the Buddhist dedication, you dedicate for a full enlightenment and you remember emptiness.
Yep, yep.
And then all of that effort, all of that merit won't result in more samsara. It will result in enlightenment, and it also cannot be lost.
Yeah.
So to dedicate, we've got to dedicate for enlightenment, because if we dedicate for anything less, what we get is a good time in samsara.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes sense. Here we are. This is the result of faulty dedications. Our life now, because, you know, we've got it great, but we're still in samsara. So we have to dedicate for full enlightenment. And then we've got to remember emptiness or dependent arising, that the action, the goal, the participants, everyone depend on each other, are not inherently existent, depend on each other, and therefore enlightenment is possible. So if you remember emptiness and you do your own little spiel about it, you know, emptiness or dependent arising, then it can't be lost or destroyed.
Yeah, that's really good, because I think, I mean, if I've been able to do that morning practice since I took my vows with Ken Rinpoche, as he was then, Geshe Tashi, I've been able to do that every day since then. I haven't wavered, and I've done all the prayers, and then I've incorporated all those mantras. But at the end of the day, it's like I'm just, I thought, well, it's just disappearing. So I've got to
really. You can even do it like when you put your head on the pillow. Then as I put my head on the pillow, may everyone achieve the peace of nirvana.
Mm.
May I bring them to it.
Yep, yep.
So even if it's not a formal dedication, you can hitchhike it onto a bedtime routine.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's a Cotsantina, it's fine.
Yep.
You know, I had a similar thing too. Like, I've fallen off the wagon many times with my commitments and prayers. But then the last time that I, you know, retook the initiation, so now I've done it every night. I've done my prayers. Pretty poor quality, but I've done it every single night. So it's there, even though, you know, the standard is no good, but the continuity is there.
And that's the starting point, isn't it? It's like you have to take those baby steps to get to be the big steps, you know. That's
well, it's how like we have to eat every day.
Yep.
And we might go through years where our diet is pretty poor, but we still have to eat every day. We can't put it off for a year.
That's right. That's right.
So it's food. It's eating every day.
Yeah. Well, that's really good. It's been really good tonight bringing it together. And I think I'm going to come to the next How Buddhism Helps. There's just three.
Yeah, it's just three.
I think I'll come along to that. It's just bringing it into an everyday kind of realistic mode for me, which is really good, because I get really immersed in the discovering Buddhism, and it's nice to just step out and just, I don't know, feels a bit freer.
It's quite a modern course, this one, How Buddhism Helps. So it is the three principal aspects of the path, but it's modern, and I hardly ever mention those three principal aspects in a way. Like, it's a way of how to do it without saying the Buddhist things. So it's a lot of fun. I really like that one, the short and sweet, get it all in one go.
It seemed like a good plan while I was on a roll with this. So
And see, and because you have done the study, you'll be able to listen out for each of those things. So, you know, I try and weave in the things just in a conversational way, but you'll hear, oh, that's the three this's, or the four that's, or the whatever. And you'll be able to identify them. So I think you'll find it's always such a buzz when you can do that, where you recognize the material.
It's like, for me, a layered in learning. I do, it's something to do. We've all got different learning styles and all that. I learned about that as a trainer. But for me, layered in learning is good. And multi things, even though the vision's a little failing, colors and visual stuff still works. auditory still works. It's all of that. So,
and looking forward to seeing both of you again for the rest of our, you know, online events.